on two of the biggest sticking points in negotiations with the teachers' union in an attempt to avert what would be the first strike in district history. Thus spake the Oregonian. And I hope you're able to discern the quotes there around those past words. They forget entirely the concessions that teachers make simply coming on a daily basis, simply by showing up for what is arguably one of the most difficult jobs and the lowest paying jobs available. Chief Executive of Terminal Operator ICTSI Oregon says no sustained improvement since the agreement with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Well, of course, it's possible that ICTSI would understate productivity improvements to strengthen its hand in contract negotiations with Hanjin and other ocean carriers. Also, it's possible that since they brought in scabs, the work wouldn't be up to the standards of the usual union workers. And days before the Castleton oil train explosion, something that made the news, here's something that didn't make the news. President Obama signed a bill hastening fracking permits on North Dakota public lands. Yeah, the filters are fascinating. But what's more fascinating than the filters are the connections between stories. And ExxonMobil subsidiary XTO Energy will have to face criminal charges for allegedly dumping tens of thousands of gallons of hydraulic fracturing waste, that's of course fracking waste, at Marcellus Shale drilling site back in 2010. That's the huge deposit that stretches a large swath of the northern east coast. And the National Weather Service has got this for us: rain, highs near 53. A bright, zesty south wind, 9 to 11 miles per hour, could gust up to 18. But then, of course, that's out in the gorge. Tonight, rain, lows around 42, breezy 10 to 15, gusting up to 25. For tomorrow, look for more rain and a high around 49, wind dropping off significantly, and tomorrow night, more rain, lows around 44. We will forego the alternative forecast today. The dirtbag has lots of things to tell us about nitrogen, and we'll let the moon take care of its own lunar marching orders for now. But that is the alternative and the conventional forecast for today. And a few headlines. I want to now speak with welcome our guest, Jonathan Latham, to the KBOO airwaves. Been trying to talk with Jonathan for a while about GMOs that probably no one else has a wider range of knowledge about exactly what the politics as well as the science. And science, of course, the state of American scientific reporting is laughably hopeless and behind. And we wonder, is this because they don't want people to know about GMOs and other things? Or is it simply because the reporting is tailored to the reader's level of education? That's an interesting question right there. But first, good morning, Jonathan, and thank you so much for being with us today. We're really glad
Thanks
to have
for
you.
Inviting me.
Well, you've written extensively about GMOs. You've done a lot of investigation on this and on taking a long, hard look at the state of scientific reporting in general. But your recent article, I wonder if you could give the listeners a recap of that, and then we've got a couple of questions too to get to.
So you asking about the reporting of GMOs that I was writing
yes,
about?
Yes, I was. Yes, specifically. Specifically.
So basically, there's some kind of preliminary GMO research that has become global news. Things like golden rice, and these are virtually experimental projects that have been blown up by the global media into being huge breakthroughs that will that will save millions of people from malnutrition, et cetera, and rescue Africa out of poverty. And, you know, huge claims have been made for these projects when basically, you know, some of them are unpublished, some of them are have already failed, some of them are based on retracted papers. So basically the reporting has gone way, way beyond the actual data about these GMOs.
And yet, some of the real science that has been done, and some of the discoveries about drawbacks and problems with GMO types of food for both human and animal consumption, that doesn't ever seem to make it through to the general public. And there is a question, of course, that science writers tend to tailor their writing to the market, to the consumer, and that consumer's level of education. There's great concern in this country, it seems, not wishing to use language that would bewilder people or go over their heads. But that leaves out a great deal of science, it seems to me. For example, I mean, I'm looking at this by you. The regulators discover a hidden viral gene in commercial GMO crops. Mm-hmm. Now, that's actual science writing right there. And I wonder how many people saw that article, and out of the people who read it, what their understanding was of the information provided there. Can you talk a little bit about science writing and GMOs and some of the problems?
Well, the science reporting of GMOs is basically backwards in this country and in most other countries too. So you know, a huge deal is made out of preliminary research projects that they're likely will go nowhere, and then absolutely nothing is written about the increase in pesticide use. Monsanto's quarterly profits have just gone up because they're selling so much Roundup, for example, that they're drenching the countryside in it, and more health issues are coming out about it in the scientific media, in the scientific press, in the scientific journals, if you like. But it's not being reported. So the reporting is completely backwards. You know, it has nothing really to do with whether people will understand the technicalities of it. The science writers are, you know, supposed to be trained to explain things that are slightly difficult. But you know, everybody can understand if there's more pesticide use and if those pesticides are not properly tested or if they have health hazards known as associated with it, which many of them do, then it's not a problem of people, you know, not being able to understand the information. The science media, you know, appears to be controlled by the biotechnology and agribusiness industries.
Well, there's
they're the ones that are being pleased by this coverage.
They're not going to be pleased when they're hit by an avalanche of lawsuits further on down the line, when some of these discoveries prove out and we find that there are serious health dangers and other dangers too to the environment, to our seed banks, to the environment in ways that are utterly unpredictable and unforeseen. How do researchers go about establishing the dangers? In fact, because they have actuarials who try to figure out, well, if we do this and release this into the environment, what are the likely consequences, and how badly are we going to get sued for them? How are those numbers arrived at?
Well, the agribusiness industry would like to do is make sure that none of those scientific reports ever reach the light of day. I mean, their products are approved based on in-house research, right? And so, you know, if they will do their best to make sure that nothing really further happens, and that if there is research that comes out that relatively few people hear about it, or that its conclusions are toned down. But even if good quality science comes out, you know, somebody has to be able to prove a connection between your illness, for example, and a pesticide. So it's not, you know, the legal, they have good reasons to think that they will be able to get away with these, you know, even with major health scandals from arising from pesticides, for example.
One of the concerns that is frequently arises when regarding GMOs is the genie out of the bottle issue. There is no calling this stuff back. Has any research at all been done on, say, a particular genetically modified organism is released into the environment? We find serious problems with it. What, if any, research is being done to control that eventuality?
Well, there are. I mean, whether it's at all possible to recall a GMO organism depends on a whole lot of things. I mean, there are one or two GMO crops that have actually been withdrawn. The Starlink corn, for example, was supposed to be only fed to animals, and it got into the human food supply, and it wasn't approved for human use. They more or less managed to remove it from the seed supply because corn doesn't have an independent life off of the farm, at least in this country. Quite a long period, over 10 years or so, they managed more or less to remove all traces of that Starlink corn. But it's not a very easy task. And, you know, it's probable that that stuff is still in the seed supply somewhere. And it's also, I mean, it was facilitated by the fact that corn doesn't live off farms. So in Mexico, for example, that wouldn't be true. So if Starlink corn got into Mexican maize, there'd be very little that you could do about it because the gene would be out there, it would be in wild maize plants. It'll be in maize plants that grow by the side of the road. The answer is we do know that in many cases transgenes are hard to control. That is the research that basically we do know, and the kind of expectation you'd be able to control a transgene when it's out of the lab or being grown as a common thing in fields is unrealistic.
Seems to me that we just really scratched the surface. I've got a lot more I'd like to ask you about, and of course, all of this is enabled enormously by the fact that people move as vectors, move around the world at a tremendous rate now that never before seen. So naturally, that potentiates any harm or good, for that matter, I suppose, that might come of these from these organisms. Is there anything that you'd like to point out to listeners? We're running out of time here, so is there a resource, is there somewhere people can go to track the research that's happening? I've got a lot more I want to ask you, but for now, a final point you'd like to make, and also where people can find your articles and so forth.
Well, we have a website called Independent Science News that focuses a reasonable amount on GMOs and then agriculture and food issues. And then we have a more technical website called the Bioscience Resource Project, where there are some, you know, we try to get together key papers that have been published over the years that will make people think about what it is the science actually says versus what the media actually claims that it says. So those are two very useful resources if people want to know. But there's a general shortage, right? The media is basically sewn up. It's attempting to spin a picture of GMOs where research has been done, or the research that has been done has shown that GMOs are safe, et cetera, et cetera. You know, a story that's very, very friendly to the industry. They haven't really managed because the issues around GMOs are so obvious and so major that a lot of the public is well aware that there are potential health issues out there, and so I think it's going to be interesting to see how they attempt to control the debate. I mean, I think Monsanto has gone back to its PR advisors to try to come up with new strategies of how to make sure that they get their way in their financial markets and that their reputation emerges, you know, more or less intact. But with the internet, it's getting harder and harder.
Jonathan, thank you so much for that. We really are very, very glad to have you join us today. This is in Cascadia for Wednesday, January 8th, 2014. Janet Anderson engineered the show today. Thanks so much, Janet. Kathleen Stevenson is the KVOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand.
A newly amended civil rights suit alleges that the deputy sheriff who shot down Andy Lopez was known by his superiors to have racist and extremist tendencies and beliefs. We'll speak to the lawyer for the Lopez family, and we'll also feature an extended update on the Israeli-occupied Palestine from Nora Barros Friedman and the electronic intifada.net. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein, and we return to the case of Andy Lopez. There was, in fact, a new amended and expanded federal civil rights complaint introduced again today in California for the wrongful death, the wrongful shooting by a sheriff's deputy named Eric Gelhaus of this young eighth grader. Joining us is the attorney for the family, and Arnaldo Garcias, welcome back to Flashpoints. It's good to have you with us. Why don't you explain why you decided to reintroduce and amend the suit? Tell us, give us just a bit of the background there.
Dennis, thank you. First, it's great to be back, and two, it's an important case. Speaking technically and in a legal sense, we amended the complaint because there were certain claims, state law claims, wrongful death, negligence, some punitive damages claims under state